All right. Well, good morning, everybody. And this is our annual Seder Insights Shiur. So as you can see, I have before you every rabbi's vanity project is to make their own Haggadah. So I have to admit, even though I'm a vain person, I did not set out initially to make a Haggadah. I set out that every year I put together ideas for the Seder to share with you in the hopes that maybe it's something worthwhile to share at your respective Seder tables. And then I realized I was keeping a live document, and then I said, well, I need the words of the Haggadah to as reference for the idea. And then I realized, I said, the best way to organize is just to put the text that I got onto a Word document, put footnotes, and in the footnotes, I get to put all the ideas over the years. So the idea is, this is year number two of different ideas. We're not going to go through everything that was added to the Haggadah between last year and this year, but rather I'll share with you a few of the highlights that I'd like to bring to your attention. And then from there, basically, you have in the back of the room, there's the Haggadah sheets. I didn't put them at the table because I don't want, you probably don't want croissant crumbs and who knows what else getting over it. And you bring it to your Seder table, like, wow, there's a whole Beltane donut right over here. What do you know? I got stuck between the pages. So I'll give you what we call the Torah Shabbat Peh right now, and we'll do the, and you'll have the Torah Shabbat Tzav Havdil with you as well. All right, so a few issues. Again, I'm just going kind of in order. Each idea is just an independent one on its own. So, last year at the beginning of the Haggadah, I saw this in a Minchas Asher, but it's a well-known story cited in many places about the Chafetz Chaim. It's really talking about a Shabbos night. He has his guests over. You can tell that they're pretty hungry. They're famished. It was very long davening. Someone decided to do Karbach Shabbos without announcing it, and people are just like, they are starving, you know? So he skips Shalom Aleichem. He goes straight to Kiddush, and then someone at the table is like, Chaim, the Baal Mishabura himself, how can he skip past Kiddush? How can he skip past Shalom Aleichem and go straight to Kiddush? So the Chafetz Chaim said, look, I have guests who are hungry. I have angels who don't need to eat. The angels could wait until my guests get to eat some food. So that was what I shared last year. And then I just, that's an interesting question. It sounds like he did, but I'm not sure. No, I always tell Marissa, I say, well, I have the literal Eishes Chayil right in front of me. It's better than the song. when you think about it, maybe it's like a mashal for Torah and Shah. I don't know, there's like different mashal what it's for. So okay. So then what I looked into afterwards is there even might be some sense of a welcome. There might be some sense of a halachic argument that can be made as well, which is that we have a mandate called Kiddush B'Makom Suda, that one is supposed to have their Kiddush meal. Their meal right after making Kiddush is supposed to be the same place that you make Kiddush. And there's even a certain time delay that you're allowed to have, but it shouldn't be particularly long. In theory, soon after making Kiddush, you should be launching into your Suda to eat. And that means you should be having Hamotzi. So I wanted to make the argument. First of all, one has to eat their Avi Koman before Chatzos, so you definitely better get there before Jewish midnight. But also, maybe there's an inyan to not dally too long, because if there's too much time that elapses between Kiddush and actually getting to the matzah itself, then it could spell trouble for Kiddush for Makom Suda.
I mean, just something interesting. Jewish midnight.
I mean, Chatzos, like
No,
a, but
what Jewish midnight? What is that?
this time of year, it's 12, so we're doing 12:30, still 54, 12:54. I put it on the schedule. I looked it up on my spot. So yeah, so it would be 12 o'clock. It'd be 12. So okay, it gives you a little bit extra time. You want to be extra machbit, but you can go by midnight kipshuto, 12 o'clock. I
What does that mean?
oh, so it means
You
that
have
you're
to be.
supposed to eat the api
No, I
koman
understand
before.
that. But what is it? Why is it Jewish midnight time?
Because we go based on how long the day is. We basically take the day and the night, we split it up into 12 parts. So that's why, like during these long summer days, a daytime could be more than 12 hours actually. And then the halakhic hours are proportional. So that's what stretches it out or makes it smaller. Okay, so that was one point that I wanted to make. Apparently, so C. Pesach Frank talks about this in Mikra Kodesh, and I saw an article subsequent to past Pesach by Rabbis Chaim Saiman and Rabbi Josh Weinberger, article, Should Magid Take Forever? So I said, I don't need to write this article. Gedolim v'tovim mimeni have already done it. So I realized I put the hyperlink on a printed out document. That doesn't help you guys, but you punch it into Google if you're interested. I think it's on Torah Music. Okay, so that was idea number one. Idea number two, this comes from Rav Yerucham Olshin. And again, I'm kind of reading from my Haggadah over here. So ironically, what I do with the Haggadah is that I translated or adapted from Hebrew Svarim into English to make it accessible, but it means I actually don't have the original text in front of me right now. Yeah.
Is there an opinion as to how long you can or shouldn't wait, or what would be
Well, I think
too
he said you
far
should
from?
judge when your guests are overly hungry. You should judge
I
the
have
room.
to. It's in the. We have to pull out the Magen Avraham. It's the Magen Avraham in. Let's see, Resh Ayin Gimel. So I have to look back. I mean, I would assume many times in halacha, 30 minutes is like, for instance, like if you take off your tzitzis for more than 30 minutes, when you put them back on, you should be making a new bracha. 30 minutes sometimes is kind of like that zone of like, are you still being osek in a certain inyan? So I have to look more into it, but I would guess 30
So
minutes.
in a Seder, though, like the
Right.
oven is the
Yes.
ingredient,
So
right? So
that,
it's like
very good.
still it's part of the ingredient.
100%. And I think that's what we generally rely on with what David's saying is that, it's true, it might take some time to get through Magen and get to the matzah, but it's not like you're being mafsik. There's not a hefsik and there's not a disruption between making Kiddush and your Suda. Everything you're doing is to culminate in getting to your Suda and eating the matzah and everything else that results from there. So I think that is honestly what we generally rely on, but I just wanted to like give a little extra oomph of maybe, you want to be more machmir. I have a strategy that I've tried to employ in the past, which is, it just depends on the nature of your Seder table. So if you're at a Seder table where it's like lots of little children and they come back with their Rebbe's Haggadah of all their ideas that they want to read at the table, so you can give like quotas out and you can say, okay, we'll save the rest for Shulchan Aruch. And then at the mealtime, when everyone's eating and they're satiated, or say, we'll always connect, satiated, so, then they can listen. It's like you have all the food here to keep you guys busy, and that way I can ramble on, right? So that's a suggestion that I try to make.
Rabbi, we took out lots of during Zoom during COVID.
Yeah.
Are there things in
Yeah.
that in the
So Rav Rimon, I don't have it in front of me. Rav Rimon in his Haggadah, he has a section called something like the Seder or Haggadah B'Sha'as HaDchak, in which he basically outlines what the essential parts of the Seder are. And there's this really cool book that someone showed me a while ago. I want to get hold of it, which kind of color codes the entire Haggadah and tells you which era certain parts of the Haggadah are from. So if you know, like, oh, this part with Ran Gamliel, that's the Mishnayos, this is from the Talmud, this is Gaonim, oh, Shvo Chamaschah, that's like a medieval thing, right? So if you don't say Shvo Chamaschah, you're still Yotzei the Seder. So kind of breaking down what the essentials are. So I could I maybe I should have brought that, but yes,
or
there is,
incorporated.
or incorporated in here. Well, hopefully we shouldn't need to incorporate it, but it's good to have on hand. It's like what I said when we had that earthquake the other day. So a lot of well-meaning people were circulating the bracha in WhatsApp groups 30 minutes after the earthquake occurred. So the issue is you have to make the bracha toch kedei dibor within a few seconds. So I said, this is.
We're after shots.
There are, okay, so maybe it will be done. Because I was going to say, the big news down here was the earthquake. The big news up in Shemayim were all the brachot batalos that were just made. But it's like one of my Misifta Rebbe moments. But anyway, I said, but now you guys know the halacha for the next time there's an earthquake. Yeah. So, now we know the halacha for the next time there's a reason that we need to constrain and curtail the Haggadah. Hopefully, we shouldn't have to do that. So, okay, next idea is what we're celebrating. So I put this one, on Bein Yisrael La'amim, because in Kiddush, we're, and our Havdalah rather, we're making, distinctions between the Jewish people and between the nations. So Rav Yerucham Olshin, in Yireach L'Mo'adim, so he's one of the, actually, I think, no, he didn't pass away, I think he's still alive, so hopefully Shlita. I remember the one, oh no, it was Rav Matyatsiyahu Salomon from Lakewood who passed away. Rav Yerucham Olshin, God willing, live on Me'av Esh B'Shana. So he points out that there seems to be two interesting passages in the Rambam. The Rambam in one place says that we're supposed to talk about the miracles and the wonders, the nisim and the flaos, And also, Kol Hamar Baharis Meshubach. So the more you talk about it, that's wonderful. And then he also talks about how, this is a little bit later, he says that we should also remember, I see, I found just a typo in my Haggadah. Okay, I'll have to make notes as we're going through. That's okay. I'll catch it for next year. So he says also we're supposed to remember that our ancestors denied God's existence and strayed after these hevel havel and these vanities, and they worshipped idols, and then we conclude with the true faith of Judaism. That's a part of the Haggadah. What Yerucham Olshan points out is that there's really two levels of celebration over here that the Rambam emphasizing. There's the Jewish people on kind of like the physical national level that we celebrate that we were able to physically survive Egypt, but also on the theological level that we distinguish ourselves from the other nations as well. And actually, you know what? I'm going to go a little bit out of order because this idea actually connects to something from a new Haggadah I got, Rav Yaakov Edelstein. He was a big rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. I think he was in like the Tel Aviv or maybe a little bit north of that area. And he was a big Haredi rabbi, but apparently his community didn't realize who he was. And he was like walking their midst all the time. They didn't realize how chashuv he was. It was very interesting reading up on him. So one idea in his Haggadah is that he, now this is jumping all the way toward the end of the Seder, the fourth cup of wine. So what do the, right, pop quiz time. What do the four cups of wine represent, my friends? For, right. The four redemptions are Seis Salti Vega'alti L'Kachti. So God says, I'll take you out, I'll save you, I'll redeem you, and I will take you again. So what's going on with...
What's the first one?
Votsesi, I'll bring you out. Right, so what's... And then I'll save you, and I will... redeem you, and I will take you. So what's taking? That's the question. You know, what do you think? Once is the geula? Once God has redeemed us, what's taking for what? What's for like
giving the Torah, taking into that way of life.
Ah, very good. So you're machaving or chavenis, whatever it is in feminine. I never hear using the feminine side. I'm just guessing over here. To the Ksav Sofer. So he quotes the Ksav Sofer, who says, Shalachim Bekos HaRevias Mar B'Bamir Shvach, and we have a lot of praises we do over the fourth coast. Hallel B'Nishmas Kol Chai, right? That whole long stretch. And why? Because this is a celebration of God taking us as his nation, designating us. He says, HaGu'ula Hachi Chashuv V'Yishenienu Ha'am HaNevkar. The greatest redemption is that we become the chosen people. Lo Stam Nayino Imbne Chorin Kiblanu Atzmaut Kamo Yefen Osin. So he says it's not just simply that we became a nation. There's a lot of nations in here, a lot of ethnicities, a lot of countries. We talk about Shalei, which how do you actually define what a nation is, right? So it's some sort of collective that all identifies together. But he says, you know, the purpose of the redemption from Egypt wasn't just to become a nation. Stam Atzmaut Zelokum. To simply be an independent nation, to simply be chafshi, to be free, is not valuable enough in and of itself. The greatest value is not to just be one of the other 70 nations, but to be God's nation, and that's what Lekachti is. And this connects very well, of course. I will adopt you. I like that. That's a good rendering. I will adopt you as my own. And we take God as well. It's a mutual relationship. So, you know, and again, you can see like he's a Haredi rabbi. So definitely the language is very deliberate. He says, Stam Atzmaut, like Yom Ha'atzmaut, same word. Stam Atzmaut Zeloklum. And I think this is an important thing, you know, as Jewish people, we are a nation. But what makes us special is that we're not just any nation, that we're God's nation. And that means living to the morality and living up to the standards that God puts forth in his Torah. It's one of the most classic lines that gets cited in this regard when we're taken out of Egypt is the line in Pirkei Avos, who can finish for me, Eilecha ben Chorin, there is no one who is free, Ella, Misho Seik Batorah. The true free person is one who studies Torah. And that's what makes us unique. So, all right, I went a little bit out of order, but it connects to that idea as well, that we're not just celebrating the physical redemption from Egypt, but the spiritual and theological redemption as well, and that's what Lekachti is. Okay?
So what do you think about adding extra morals in the Seder?
In what respect?
I'm talking about different punishments, the lashings, things like that.
Oh, you're saying when we like, you know, we take the wine out and,
right.
You know, it's funny. I saw some people who, right. So traditionally we, you know, we take the wine out and it's because one of the reasons, because we're remembering that the Egyptians suffered, even though they're really bad. So I saw somebody this year, someone from like much more politically liberal circles. He's like, and this year, because of Gaza, we should pour the whole cup out on our plates. So I was, there was this group on Facebook called Union for Performative Judaism. So like they would post things like this, like, you know, like when you do like, if not now, they'll do like a Havdalah during Shabbos and as an anti-Israel protest or something. I wish I could make these things up. They literally did Havdalah while the sun was still out.
Yeah, because they whip people with, you know, scallions, things like that as part
it's
of
a different, you know, like starting.
Yeah. The Sfarim do not identify with that. Trust me. This is like all of us Ashkenazim. This is a break off from the Ashkenazim. We've done that. Okay, another idea I want to share with you is the chassam. We just did the chassam sofer. So now the chassam sofer. And I think I may have shared this in the Dvar Torah and Shul. So if you were in attendance and you remember this, you'll forgive me for the chazara. So the chassam sofer, this actually, there is a chassam sofer haggadah, I believe, but I was reading through the drushos of the chassam sofer, and I was trying to like find like little tidbits of Pesach ideas to pull out from his broader drushos. And he has this comment. So we say in Manishtana, Halayla Hazek Kulanim Mesubin, that tonight all of us recline. So the question the Chassam Sofer asks is, how is it possible that we could all be reclining on a night like this? Especially when you think about it, certain Seder tables, there are those who are my seniors, literally. There are those who are more professionally accomplished than I am. Those who are, you remember this one?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Oh, you're just excited for it. Okay. yeah. Right, so there's so you know what right so the right so there's a whole discussion about like a woman reclining in the presence of her husband, but you know, but if she's an Isha Chashuva, and then we pass him, every woman is a chashuva balabasta, so every woman gets to recline. So yeah, there we go, everyone gets to celebrate. So but the question is, how is it possible, how can I possibly recline in the face of these people who have higher status than I do? And so he cites it seems to be a medrash, and he track it down from Rav Yaakov Emden, that when Roman dignitaries came to visit the temple, they realized that there was no red carpet that was thrown out for them. There wasn't even a red carpet for the Jewish dignitaries that came, right? So imagine you come on one of these missions to Israel, you expect the red carpet to be rolled out for you, and then you don't have that same buzz when you arrive there. So what happens? So they turn to the administrators of the temple, and they say, "No, we're foreign dignitaries. Aren't we supposed to get certain formalities and pleasantries and treatments?" So he explained that there's Ein Gavus Lifnei Hamakom, that when it comes to the temple, which is the house of God, no one is supposed to be getting special treatment. And the only person, or not person, only being who is supposed to be celebrated here is God in his own house. And so the Chassam Sofer tries to really connect this to what we're doing on the Pesach night. And the Pesach night also is trying to keep that kind of utopian ideal in that, recognizing that when we're in the presence of God and God take us out of Egypt and we're retelling the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, like if I lean or you lean, but you've learned this many Masechtas and Shas, but you're like at this stage in your career, you've made partner in a law firm, whatever it might be. So, but all these finite accomplishments essentially become equalized in the presence of the infinite. So that's another idea on Kulanu Mesubin, and we're all able to recline when we are in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the, now you're going to ask me the question, what about all the things that seem to still have be hierarchical when it comes to the temple, right? That's a great question. Yeah, well, any of you thinking about that? Yeah, so, all right, Yisraelim, Levim, Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol, right? So,
what David said is right, though, at the end of the day, when we die, we're all just.
Right, and this is Rav Gamliel's Takana, by the way. That it should be for every Jew should get like the simple tachrich and the simple burial shrouds. Every person, you know, the idea of like the simple wooden coffin. And so Rav Moshe Feinstein, I was talking to the colleague of mine, Rabbi Daniel Siani, and he works in a Chevra Kadisha work profession. Like that's what he does. So I interviewed him on I think I called the episode like Big Funeral or something, like Big Pharma, so you got Big Funeral. And he was like, tell me kind of about the industry. So apparently, only in the last I'm not sure, maybe 500 years or so, I don't have the correct number. The there were when there were Kabbalistic customs that more Kabbalistic customs that made their way into the funeral process, and one of them was the idea of using a mikvah during the tahara. And there's nothing on the books until I think this Sefer Ma'aser Yabok, which is kind of has a lot of these customs, that talks about using a mikvah. The only thing we have a source for is using tisha kavin, 9 kavin of water, and pouring it on someone. And so Rav Moshe Feinstein opposed.
That dipping the body
Yeah.
in a mikvah?
Yeah. And then the funny thing Rav Moshe points out is a lot of these funeral homes that have mikvahs, they're not even kosher mikvahs anyway. So you're not really accomplishing anything. But no, he also says, like, you're already dead, so you're kind of tamei base. So you're as tamei as you get. But basically, Rav Moshe. So there was one, I think he point, I have to look back at it, but he told me there's a place in Queens
Well,
that had
because what? A mikvah. We do.
Well,
no,
we
we don't,
have a,
but it's not a mikvah. It's not set up like a mikvah.
well,
It's
that's one of
created
the,
like
well,
a mikvah.
yeah, I mean,
but that was one of Ramosha's
both
points.
of
It's
the
like, it's
Jews.
not even a real mikvah anyway. That was one of his points. But
Oh, it's not a real mikvah?
I mean, I don't know what they have here, but
Here it's water.
maintaining a real mikvah,
Yeah.
it's like, that's a, so I mean, a lot of funeral homes, that's, so the point is, even if you have a non-real one, it basically increases the expenses of the funeral preparation. And Moshe Feinstein said, aside from the fact that we don't even have a good source for it, now you're going against one of the earliest takanos that we have, which is ensuring that everyone can be buried with dignity without having to worry about not being able to leave over an estate for their next of kin because all the money basically went into the funeral. So, now, because, and he even went so far as to say, even if you want to be quote unquote from and machmir and leave in your will, that you want to basically be dipped in the mikvah during your tahara, it still would be inappropriate because what's gonna, he doesn't say it this way, but I'm saying it this way. It's like when glot became no longer glot, glot became the standard. Glot kosher is the standard for kashrus. So what's gonna happen is the standard is gonna be that you're gonna have to have a mikvah. It'll start with some people being frumer, and then it'll become the standard for everybody, and then funeral expenses go even higher than they already are. So that was how did we get into that? Ah,
Rabbi,
so we talked about
FYI,
Reuben,
there are
the idea
two.
of making sure that especially at least in death. Now I would argue it's a shame that only in death we have this principle. Imagine we could apply that to like weddings and other kinds of stuff in lifetime. If we could apply the same kind of principle, they've tried, I think especially in the Haredi, even in the Haredi communities where they in theory might have some more control, I think it's failed. And I mean I think certain places worked. My cousins in Borough Park area, they have a rule like for bas mitzvahs or something. The thing is, fast misses aren't even like a real thing in the Haredi world anyway. So, you just together go out with your family to a restaurant and that's it.
Oh yeah, I mean, in Chad, they don't allow the girls to have big parties for bat mitzvahs.
Yeah.
They used to, and then they a Chag is the school
Beis
system
Yaakov, essentially.
in Paraguay that my kids, so two of my kids go to, and they were very upset because a few blocks down, the other cousins are going to Shalamis and they're having.
Rabbi, FYI, there are
So
two.
this is Rav Moshe Feinstein. He has several shivos on bas mitzvahs, but there's a line that everyone always glosses over. And they talk about more about ceremonies and parties, but it may very well apply to that as well. I'm sure he would say that. He says, if I could get, I'm talking about bas mitzvahs, but if I could get rid of bar mitzvah ceremonies, oh, I would do that as well. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, he believed in equality. He said, I don't even want bar mitzvah ceremonies taking place in Shul. Like no weddings?
Well, you can do a wedding. Yeah, you don't have to do it so
I wouldn't
extravagantly.
be I wouldn't be surprised if there's one thing about Rav Moshe, it's his he's very pragmatic. This is sad. Well, we'll see this in the shiurim that we do with Ramosha. He's a very pragmatic posek in many regards. It would not surprise me if a simple, Gadol Hador living in an apartment in the Lower East Side was not a fan of big opulence and extravagance. I think most Gadolim probably, if they could do away with that, they would. All right. So let's flip more through the pages over here and see what I checked off. Okay. Another Chasam Sofer. On the line, Vayareu osanu vayanunu. So the way it gets rendered in my Haggadah is, and the Egyptians did bad to us and afflicted us. But actually, the Chasam Sofer says another way to render this isn't that they caused bad to us, but they attributed nefarious intentions to us. And this, of course, connects, as he points out, to the idea that they thought we would join with their enemies and try to conquer Egypt. So it's not that they did bad to us, but they attributed nefarious intentions to the Jewish people.
Yeah, but that also colored how they related to us, and then they did bad to us as a consequence.
Right. Right. I mean, it's right, but that's Vayanunu. Right? So they oppress us, but what's the first part? It sounds redundant, like just two words for saying that they did bad things to us. So one is that they attributed various intentions to us, and then as a result, they oppressed us.
Like the rest of the world is doing now.
Yeah, that's Maisavo Simon Labanim, right? That's why we read this, you know? There's messages for all the doors, unfortunately.
Right. So it's like that it's not just, oh, people, we hate you. It's like we have a reason for that's it's
right.
Like they're saying now there's a reason for October 7th. They're trying to
exactly
put a reason.
Exactly. It's our fault that right.
We wouldn't accept it's your fault.
Precisely. This is exactly what we see throughout the generations, that they first ascribed it, you know, think about all the blood libels. They ascribe nefarious actions and intentions to us, and then they have a pretext to justify their deeds against us. Now, I just want to point out one thing. This is especially an affront to us because the Jewish people, one of the things that we strongly value is something called Hakaras HaTov. Now, this is our – usually we do Sefer HaChinuch during this slot. So now I will quote to you from the Sefer HaChinuch itself to be Mekayim Sefer HaChinuch today. So if you remember back – Gratitude. Yes. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes regarding when it comes to parents, and again, I translated a lot of stuff here, so I'm actually not reading from the original Hebrew, but we did read it once upon a time. He says, it is fitting for a person to acknowledge and return kindness to people who are good to him, and not to be an ungrateful, this was actually a Sephardic translation, scoundrel, because that is a bad or repulsive attribute before God and people. So when he's talking about the mitzvah, kibud av v'aim, he explained why we have to honor our parents. He says, one of the most obvious things is that, well, you know, they brought you into this world, and hopefully they did some good things for you. Maybe they paid you yeshiva day school tuition. Certainly, if they did that, you have what to be grateful for, and to be kafui tov, and to deny the good that others do for you. That's something that's just like one of the most despicable mitos to have. And in fact, coming back to our good friend Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Sefer Tzadkos Shabracha, there's a tshuva that Rabbi Ram, he's going to be making aliyah soon, God willing, but he has been the administrator for the Geirus based in, for the conversion based in, that's run by the based in of America. So, as you can imagine, I interviewed him on something related to Geirus. And he did this tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And it wasn't actually, usually when you talk about Geirus and you talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein, you talk about the tshuvas, like, what is the standard for Geirus? Can you retroactively annul someone's Geirus? But he actually did something that I wasn't expecting. It was a tshuva about a woman who converted, a Geirus. And apparently she must have gone through like a really frum kind of conversion that they advised her not to have anything to do with her, you know, biological family. And she reaches out to Rav Moshe Feinstein like 20 years later. Her mother's on her deathbed and or like she's on her way to dying. She says, I want to see my grandchildren. I've never seen them. And it's like one of the most poignant shuvas I've probably ever read in Igros Moshe or pretty much anywhere. And this woman comes to Rav Moshe and says, like, what can I do? Can I visit her? And Rav Moshe, like, he makes all these arguments and he says, you know, even though kibud av v'aim is not one of the seven Noahide commandments of honoring one's parents, the notion of being makir tov and gratitude to someone who raised you is something that's universal, that you're required to do whether you're a Jew or a non-Jew. And the most poignant part about the tshuva is that she waited 20 years to ask the shaila. Imagine if she came to Rav Moshe Feinstein 20 years earlier before her mother was dying. But the point...
Would he have allowed it 20 years earlier?
He writes in the... I mean, it seems very clear. I have to look back to the tshuva. It seemed very clear to me that she should have been... You know, he said, like, you have to think of, like, standards because you want the kids, obviously, not to think that they can eat pork and whatever other avers. But, you know, you could have thought of, like, some, you know, thoughtful, methodical way of keeping a relationship instead of having to sever it altogether. So that's like the biggest shame of the, you know, at the end of the tshuva, it's like a bittersweet feeling. Oh, Rav Moshe saved the day. But if only she had reached out to him like 20 years earlier. So, but the point is, the Jewish people, we value Hakaras HaTov. So the fact that the Egyptians would try to undermine one of the very important mitos that makes us who we are, that's what really gets to the core of what it means when it says here, Vayareu, that they attributed nefarious intentions. So okay, there's another Chasam Sofer. Moving right along in the Haggadah. Let's see what we should do next. Let's see. Well, need to make some progress over here. So we're gonna fly over a few pages. This is why I give you the hard copies, so you can read a lot of it at when you get your next chance.
2 weeks after Pesach.
two weeks after. You can read on Pesach if you need extra reading material. Okay. So this is from my great grandfather, Rav Aaron Yosef Kurtz, the Sefer Sakan Aaron. I didn't bring the actual text in with me, but it's a family heirloom. It's great. I think it's three greats. So he has a Sefer Al HaTorah and he has a Sefer HaMedrash, which I find very cryptic. So I generally read the Al HaTorah one every now and then. I find a Torah that I like to share. So it says, "But say simi mitzray." When I was coming out of Egypt. So this is a you're gonna figure out why I picked this one. This is a wacky one. So apparently, he basically says that uses the lashon of the word vayehi, and vayehi connotes apparently a sense of distress, a sense of tsar. Now, why would there be tsar as we're leaving Egypt? This is something we've been waiting to do for a very long time. So he says, actually, that, again, this is like based on Midrashim and Harry Potter, who knows what. Apparently, Paro, you just got to work with this. Paro and his sorcerers, they put up some kind of magical, tell him my great-grandfather had all the similar interests that I had. This magical force that kept people from leaving Egypt. And fence. Yeah, magical fence. I have to look back at the original text when I was adapting it. But basically, Paro, as the Jewish people were leaving, he would kind of walk along with them a little bit so he could mitigate and minimize the extent of the miracle, because really it was Hashem who was bringing the Jewish people forward despite whatever magic tricks that he and his sorcerers came up with. But he wanted to make it look like as if, no, we're allowing you to leave. This is totally because by our own volition we're letting the Jewish people leave. So Paro kind of wanted to save face and minimize the amount of the miracle. So he would walk a little bit along with the Jewish people as they were leaving, so he could make it seem like they were leaving with his full blessings and permission in order to kind of minimize the extent that God was the one who was truly in charge. So that's why there's a little bit of that lashon of idea of tsar as the Jewish people are leaving. So that's a little bit of a wackier one. And when
you
I first
divorce law, right?
What?
Veronica, you did divorce law, right?
Veronica's yeah. Divorce law. Yeah.
Point is, like, every abuser does this. Like, when they're coming to the point of, oh, they're leaving, oh, well, be nice for a minute. Oh, right. She won't leave. And this is like nothing
pattern.
Right.
But can also be just trepidation on the time Jewish people are leaving. This, unknown is always
familiar.
Scary.
Exactly.
Yeah, they knew whatever, however bad things are, the unknown is often very frightening.
No, that's true. And, we have all these issues of how the Jewish people handle their freedom in the Midbars. That's, right. Okay, back to Rabbi Yaakov Edelstein. Now I have the actual text in here for this. So we say on the words, right? So we say Mikol Tuv Olim Ayichasir. So we thank God for all the good, and we also ask God that we not lack this goodness forever. This is actually something we say benching all the time. It's not unique to Pesach, but benching is part of the Seder. So I thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to maybe understand benching a little bit better as well. So he says on this, why do you have first a double lashon of good? And then we ask God not to take it away. What's going on over here? So he presents a story that comes up in Masechet Sanhedrin. Now, I'm sure some of you, perhaps many of you, have at some point been to, actually, we live in Makos together, a lot of us. Yeah. So when we made a Sima Makos, or if you've been to a Sima Makos, does anyone remember the story all the way at the end of Makos about Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues? They come to the Temple Mount. They see a fox that's right. And so just to recap, right? The fox story. And then they all rend their garments, and Rabbi Akiva begins to laugh. And he says, and Rabbi Akiva is the one who sees the big picture. He sees that even though Yerushalayim now has been plowed over, that means the next prophecy will come true, that there will be a Geula Shlema, there will be some redemption waiting at the end, a light at the end of the tunnel. So there's a lesser known story with kind of like the same dialogue that occurs. They go to visit Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus on his deathbed. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is in excruciating pain. And everyone, as you can imagine, is very solemn. And Rabbi Akiva begins to crack up again. And
this last week.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Or very recently. You mentioned this. And he's laughing because the guy got his pain here in this.
Okay, what can I do? I try it. I'm not always original. Not everyone heard of it. Okay. Okay, I'll do it. And you know what? As we always say in Yeshiva, Chazara is the Iker. So right. you get Chazara. Okay. All right, that's good. People actually remember things I share. Wow. I don't always remember what I share. You know, this is what happens. I share like a Torah on a Friday night thinking I can pull fast on people that I gave the same one like a year ago. Like, oh, wow, people are actually listening that carefully. Wow. Okay, that should be my biggest problem. I have to come up with original content.
Are they listening to learn or are they listening to catch you?
You know what? We told Shema Lishma, Bala Shema. It's like the people who follow Kriyas Torah so they can correct the Bal Korei, right? So it's a sport. So anyway, so we're approaching the end. So I want to get in a few more ideas. So he says, Rabbi Akiva begins to laugh, and all the rabbis say, kind of socially inappropriate. Like this guy is like, through Shane Payne over here, why are you laughing? So he says, because Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus apparently, he lived a very good life. Everything was going for him, whether it be financially, whether it be in terms of his own scholarship, socially, everything was going for him. And Rabbi Akiva was concerned because what's one of the main answers to theodicy? One of the main answers that everyone tries to give is that the reason that good things happen to bad people and bad to good is because the wicked receive their reward in this world and the righteous receive their reward in the world to come. So Rabbi Akiva said, until now, I was afraid that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was receiving his reward fully in this world and he would have nothing waiting for him in the world to come. And now that I can see, despite the fact that, of course, I empathize that he's experiencing this excruciating pain toward the end of his life, I can now know confidently that he's indeed among the righteous and that there is a great reward awaiting for him in the world to come. So, and that's what it means when we say, Umi kol tuvo l'chasrenu, we thank God for the good, kol tov in this world, and we pray to God that should not detract from what we have waiting in store for us in the world to come. La'olam l'chasrenu. And then I think that brings us, there may have been one other idea that I checked off that I wanted to share. If not, then I was able to, we did the fourth cup one and just making sure I got through all the things I checked off for you guys. Oh, okay. This is a good one. Back to the Chasam Sofer, on Chagadia. So there's a, oh,
sorry to interrupt. Is there any Kohanim here?
Kohanim?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to bring the
casket. Is it a funeral?
There's a funeral. We have a funeral.
Oh, I didn't know there was a funeral. Today. We're finishing in 3 minutes.
Fine. I just want to bring in.
Oh.
Just out of respect. We're going to wait.
Is this a member of the shul?
No.
Oh. Okay, just stop here. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tommy, always good. Thank you. Tommy's one of the great pillars of our community. So we appreciate all the good work that you do for us.
Thank you. Thank you. 5 minutes. Oh, wait. I just want to check.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll wrap up right over here. He's one of the very big tzaddik in our community here.
Yeah,
all, I mean, all of you guys who are involved with Chevra Kadisha, you know firsthand. So he's not someone he's one of Gallagher Funeral Home. So
ooh, I know who he's about.
You know, You don't want to have to meet him, but if you are in that situation, he's the person that you want. And I don't get a commission for that. But we fully recommend. But shouldn't need for a long time. Anyway, people like we're gonna hear this recording while you tour, like what the heck just happened? All right. So let's finish this up. So the Drush of Sam Silver points out that Chagadia is actually, you know, we sing it like kind of like a pub, like one of those pub songs, like Chagadia, right? We've already had our 4 cups of wine, right? So it's basically like, you know, like one of those bar songs at the end. He actually says it's the opposite. It's a kina. It's an elegy. It's a lamentation. And I'll just, the first part of it, he says Chagadia, Chagadia, because we bring the carbon Chagiga, we bring the carbon Pesach, and we are lamenting how nowadays we can no longer bring those two Gedim anymore, and apparently the Gemara and Thinking Pesachim indicates that you spent 2 zuz in order to purchase it, and so this is actually, he says, is a lamentation. This is similar to something at the beginning of the Haggadah. I was about to say Miguel. At the beginning of the Haggadah, Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, Maase Hashem, he says that Halach Ma'anya, when we say, anyone who's in need, come and partake of the Karban Pesach. It sounds very nice and inclusive and welcoming, but that too is lamenting that it used to be we had to have a chabura, a pre-designated group to eat the Karban Pesach. Now it's such a casual affair. Anyone can just come in and eat from the Karban Pesach. So it's kind of like the anti-inclusive eating terminals. But it's very interesting that I noticed that different points during the Seder, the Haggadah, I think this is something that we notice at a lot of our own Pesach Seder tables. That on the one hand, we celebrate what we have, but we also, whether on a familial level, we recognize those who are not here with us anymore. And I think on a national level for the Jewish people this year, we have to take stock of the fact that you know, God save the hostages and all the people who are in line of fire right now. We recognize what we don't yet have. So the Pesach Haggadah is kind of walking this dialectic, if we might say, right, to use some Rasalavichik Lashonos, of celebrating the Geula, but also pining for the ultimate Geula that we've not yet achieved, but God willing, the Jewish people, God knows we need it, to experience very soon and speedily and hear from you in our taste very soon. All right.
So what do you think about, like, you know, taking salt water and all that stuff? Doesn't that fill you up and all that? And you need to be-